Okay, I want to talk to you. We have a couple minutes to learn together. I want to talk to you about my grandmother. Talk to my grandmother, hopefully we'll get us to a lot of interesting places, whether you knew her or not. But I want to talk to you about my grandmother, who, for as long as I knew her, was always an observant woman, but would remind us periodically that because she grew up without the benefit of a formal Jewish education, she had the best questions, because she took nothing for granted. And once in a while, she'd every couple of years, I remember she would ask my brother, I don't understand this whole squeezing lemons on Shabbos business. I'm like, really? What's the big deal? Take a lemon, cut it in half, put it in a squeezer, good old-fashioned squeezer, right? Give it a turn, or just take it and squeeze it, juice comes out, what's wrong? And my brothers would explain to her, well, there's a malacha of dasht, threshing is one of the lemon test malachas, and this is somehow a derivative of a tolda of dash. And she would look at us cross-eyed. She spent time as a child on a farm in Greenfield Park, New York, in Ulster County. And she remembered what threshing was like. It was hard work. You have the wheat that's been harvested, it's been cut, still the kernels are still in the stalks. You lay them out on the floor of your barn, and either you have an animal trample over it, or more likely you take a bat, and you're whacking it until all the kernels pop out of the stalks. That's tough work. You're dripping by the time you're done. Juicing a lemon, a turn of the wrist, a squeeze of the hand, what has that to do with threshing? It's a great question. If we can put us on our preconceived notions that we know about Melech HaShabbos, it's actually a very profound question. And a question, I think, that will get us to an appreciation not only of the concept of Melech from a halachic perspective, but I think it will be a great opportunity for us to see a prismatic approach to see how the halacha and the philosophy of halacha, the details of halacha and the philosophy of halacha, are inextricably intertwined. Sometimes it's less obvious than others. With Melech HaShabbos, with a little bit of work, I think we'll see that they really one piece of whole cloth. And let's begin from Chumash. Let's begin from Chumash and from a Gemara in Daf Mem Tes, Masech HaShabbos, the first Mar Makam on your source sheet, that digs into one of them in particular. The Gemara there digs into the final presentation of Shabbos over the course of Chumash Shemot. It's a fascinating thing. The Rav points out in one of the Yahrzeit drashas, there are three major parshios of Moedim over the course of Chumash. There's a parsha Moedim in Vayikra, in Amor, which focuses on mitzvahs. Parsha Moedim in Bamidbar, that's Pinchas. We always lay in as the Maftir, that's the focus on the Musafin. And the third parsha Moedim, which is Yamim Tovim, is in Devarim. And then in Re'eh, that's the focus is in many ways on Aliyah L'Regel. The three main parshas HaMoedim, a little bit in Chumash Shemot, but no major discussion, obviously, other than the original story of Pesach, but no major global discussion of the Shalosh Regalim in over the course of Chumash Shemot. What you do have in Chumash Shemot is at least four major presentations on Shabbos. It's an interesting and larger question. You can think about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts going forward. If you mull it over next couple of days, couple of weeks, why it is that Shabbos is the center of gravity of Shabbos is in Shmos, center of gravity of Tovim is Vayikra B'Midbar Devarim. But for now, let's focus on what we find in Shmos. What we find in Shmos is four major parashios of Shabbos. It's mentioned more than four times. The four major presentations are B'Shalach, Yisro, Kisisa, and Vayakel. You would have imagined things would have started from Yisro, Aseres HaDibros, Zohar Sema Shabbos L'Kadshok. You have the focus there on the mitzvahs, both the Zohar is the mitzvah Aseh of Kiddush, as well as Lo Sasa Kol Melacha. Yeah, so Yisro is sort of a focus on the dinim, on the major headline halachos. It's intriguing that that's not the first presentation. It's intriguing that the first time we meet Shabbos is actually as a reality. Kol Yisrael, and Moshe Rabbeinu appears in Pesukim, allow Kol Yisrael to sort of naturally encounter Shabbos. Right? Because in this new normal, this new miraculous normal that food falls from the sky every morning, all of a sudden Friday they're getting double doses and Shabbos not at all. So they encounter Shabbos first as a reality, a metaphysical reality, but a reality. Then we encounter Shabbos next in Yisro in terms of focus on mitzvahs. What are, not HaKadosh Baruch Hu's half of Shabbos, how he's providing for us differently on Shabbos, but in terms of our mitzvahs. Kisisa, the Brisker Rav points out, this week's parasha, that Kisisa, the psukim are familiar to us from Kiddush, Those psukim focus on the os, Shabbos as an os, and perhaps as a two-layered os. It's a universal os and a particular os. Zeichel l'maaseh b'reishis, it reminds us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bond with all the cosmos, as well as Zeichel l'yetzias Mitzrayim. It reminds us of Shabbos as a particularistic os, speaking to the unique connection that the Jewish people enjoy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then finally, Vayakel. Vayakel is, in a sense, the most mysterious, enigmatic of all. And Vayakel is what the Gemara in Daf Mem Tes says, really the beginning of all of Masechah Shabbos. Right? Because next week, Sedra, Vayakel Pekudei is going to be, excuse me, 2 weeks from now, Vayakel Pekudei is going to be all about, sounds like a review of Truma Tetzaveh, right? Sounds like a review of last week's Parsha and this week's Parsha, of the making of the Mishkan and the making of the Kalim and making of the Big Day Kahuna. And there's this sort of like mysterious floating line, couple lines there at the very beginning of Vayakel. Vayakel Moshe Rabbeinu gathered Klal Yisrael together, and the first three psukim are a reminder about Shabbos. Seems redundant. Hard to understand what the significance of it is. That mysterious, redundant, seemingly insubstantial mention of Shabbos, the Gemara Mem Tes, as you saw, says that's where all of the complexity of Hilchos Shabbos begins. Right? Because Gemara is wondering, we have a Mishnah Daf Ayin Gimel Amanaf, I'm sure many of you have seen it. If you've learned it from a Mishnah perspective, it's Perek Zayin Mishnah Beis. If you came across in Talmud Bavli, Daf Ayin Gimel Amanaf. Either way, that's the Mishnah that one would have imagined could have been the opening Mishnah Masechah Shabbos, the list of Lamentas Malachas. There's a whole host of Malach, the process of making bread, and the process of making cloth, and the process of making leather, and so on. So all those Lamentas Malachas which we're familiar, where do they come from? And it's ironic, you learn the Gemara in Daf Ayin Gimel, the Gemara that follows the Mishnah, the Gemara jumps right into details. What's Zoreah, what's Chorish, and so on and so forth. But no talk about of origins. No talk about where this whole concept come from. And all of Hilchos Shabbos, almost all of Hilchos Shabbos is built on that list. So what do you see? Gemara Mem Tes, you have to know where to look. And the irony is, although it's a Masechah Shabbos, it's entirely tangential to the location. It's a series of names of Avraham, they had a particular conversation. The one says, oh, and they had another conversation, same people, and it happens to be about this incredibly fundamental question. Where did the list of Lamentas Malachas come from? Where did it come from? So what did you see?
Mishkan.
Mishkan, right. And that comes from Parshat Yaakov, because of this strange repetition of make sure to keep Shabbos, and then which verges straight into here as you're going to make a Mishkan. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's prelude, that was his preface to Klal Yisrael in advance of telling them how to construct the Mishkan. That's obviously telling us two things. Number one, more specifically, you need to know Hilchos Shabbos, you need to recognize that Hilchos Shabbos will be controlling even while you're engaged in the enterprise of building Mishkan. You can't violate Shabbos in the process of building Mishkan. And more fundamentally, that Mishkan is the paradigm of what Malacha is. The Torah speaks about Malacha probably 12 times across the Chumash. It's clearly very severe. The Torah is very clear. There's Karis and there's Skila. This is a very central concept, and yet what Malacha is left deliciously ambiguous. And here's the clue, as you said, the Gemara has several suggestions, but this is the one that seems to be the dominant one on Daf Mem Tes, is it's Keneged Avos HaMishkan. Whatever they did in the Mishkan, that's what we can't do on Shabbos. To do Malacha is to do the sorts of things that were done in the Mishkan. The list of Lamatas Malachas, the 39 Malachos, the Avos Malachas, the archetypes, the original categories are the different processes. They were making bread in the Mishkan, or they were producing dyes in the Mishkan, and they were producing textile, they were producing skin, and so on and so forth. So all those 39 processes that the Mishnah lists as Malacha Shabbos, those are different processes that are done in the Mishkan, and then we see those not as specifics, but as examples of categories. So to take care of plants, to encourage plant growth is all part of the planting group, and to improve soil quality, where even if it's a question of removing rocks and clearing pebbles away from soil, that's part of the plowing group, and so on and so forth, right? And that's the way we proceed throughout. So the juicing a lemon somehow is part of the threshing group, but the question remains: well, how do you get from point A to point B? How does making lemon juice somehow fall under the rubric? Is why is this such an obvious extension derivative of threshing? Question.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you want to say?
Don't we believe the Mishkan was like a reaction to the Chet HaEgel?
That's a great larger question. That probably is machlok is Rashi Rabban, but according to Rashi.
So if it is the case, then we're banking on something that possibly wouldn't have happened to learn Yafush.
That's an interesting question. Yeah, counterfactual history is a parlor game that historians like to play. And the question, what if this wouldn't have happened, how things would play out? I imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have found, if you take a Rashi approach, and the Mishkan is so to speak, B'zivet, the Rebbe Shlomo would have found some other way of conveying it. But you're right, it does definitely make Ramban's approach. Ramban assumes that the second half of Shmos is in chronological order, and that the fact that Truma Tetzaveh, the original men, Rebbe Shlomo teaches Moshe Rabbeinu about the Mishkan, Truma Tetzaveh, before Kisisu, before the Chet Ha'egel, the Ramban understands that means that's how it happened chronologically. Moshe didn't have the chance to share it with the Kal Yisrael until Vayakol Pikudei, until afterwards, because the Chet Ha'egel intervened, but the way Ramban looks at it is Mishpatim itself is part of the engagement of Kal Yisrael in the Geirus process. Once the Geirus is complete and the Bris is established between a covenant between Kadosh Baruch Hu and Kal Yisrael, then the Mishpatim, the first shear, the first Masechta, so to speak, that we have learned, was supposed to be, and was, ultimately, Truma Tetzaveh. The first mitzvahs that were going to be taught to this newly minted Jewish people are going to be Mishkan. Mishkan, Big Deguna, right? So then it definitely makes it more appealing. I think that's a very good point. What I want to do is share with you some of the we're gonna look at one detail, one particular malacha that stands out, and Rishonim have a fascinating turn of phrase about that malacha, and that hopefully will shed light on malacha in general. Then we'll see how that interacts, how the halachic aspect interacts with the philosophy of halacha. This topic is close to my heart for several reasons, but in part because it's actually what we started with this year. I have the opportunity in the afternoon to work with and one of the new initiatives in YU is a 4-year chabura that allows structure for fellows to do college more gradually over 4 years instead of 3, taking classes beginning and end of the afternoon, but allowing for an organized second Seder for close to 2 hours a day in the afternoon. Our focus is, so not only does it allows for internships to progress on a more relaxed, typical 4-year schedule instead of a more tight 3-year schedule. It allows for more consistent learning over the course of the 4 years, and it allows for engagement in serious learning of halacha at a much earlier age than you would otherwise. So actually, this year we've been learning Hilchos Shabbos, and this was our opening, before we got into the details, the nuts and bolts of the Malacha of Bishlam, Malacha of Zoreh, and so on and so forth. This is our opening topic. So take a look at the following Gemara, the next Gemara, the Gemara in Daf Tzadik Vav Amud Beis. It's the very beginning of the 11th paragraph of Masechta Shabbos. And what question does the Gemara want to know? The Gemara is talking about the last of the 39 Malachas, the Malacha of carrying something from one zone to another, or vice versa, the Malacha of Hotzah. What question does the Gemara ask? Source number 2, Daf Tzadik Vav.
What's Gemara's question?
Yeah. Where do we know it from?
Right, where do we know it from? And what's the answer?
From the
pasuk, right? Moshe makes an announcement and tells them, right? A fundraiser's dream. This may have only happened. It's been said this has happened very few times in history. A fundraiser said, "We have too many donations. Please stop giving." You don't hear that very often in a fundraising letter. But the Gemara's point is not to talk about the generosity of Kal Yisrael. The Gemara's point is to say that Moshe is telling them, in part, don't carry on Shabbos. So you have a direct reference to the malacha of Hotzah, Klai Yisrael being told, you have to avoid Hotzah. That's one of the layers of meaning of that pasuk. Now, what bothers you about that Gemara? What's out of place? Fresh voices. Fresh voices. Think about the first two Gemaras. Memtes and Tzadivav. Are they coherent? Is there a disconnect? Oh, I'm sorry.
I have a sheet.
I'm so sorry. Neither do I. Or Kusha. Yeah.
The first one says that the reason why all the melachos were instituted was because they were things that were done in the Mishkan. The second one is saying we see the proof of Motzah is something that doesn't have to do with melacha in the Mishkan, it just has to do stam, it's not giving.
Right. The first Gemara told us is one global limud that sources all 39 melachos. All these 39 melachos were done in the course of the course of constructing the Mishkan. Boom. Global solution. So then why are we now in Daf Tzadik Vav going a piece-by-piece approach? Oh, where does Hotzah come from? Oh, here's the pasuk where Moshe tells them, don't do Hotzah. they carried over the course of doing the Mishkan. As a matter of fact, the Gemara in Daf Mem Tes says so. The Gemara says they planted and making the Mishkan, don't plant on Shabbos. They harvested, you should harvest on Shabbos. And the Gemara says they carried, they were moving things on and off the trucks, so you cannot. So why do we now need a second specific source for Hotzah that falls under the global rubric of Shabbos presentation before, Parshas Vayakel, right? The Shabbos Mishkan equation. Why is Hotzah unique? Very strange. Why do you need something extra? So Tosfos, I had sent to Rabbi Green two different versions of Maamar Kamos, so I see only one of them landed here. So the other expanded version, you'd have access to, if you want to take a look later, open up a Gemara, you'll see Rabbi Tosfos and Sadi Vav on the days, and Masech HaShabbos is bothered by this problem, that this doesn't seem, this Gemara doesn't seem to sit well with the Gemara and Daf Mem Tes, and raises in brief a notion that other Rishonim, other Bali Tosfos expand on a little more. Tosfos says, well, Hotzah must be different. You're right, the other Malachas don't, you don't find 39 separate psukim, one for each Malacha. Hotzah is a Malacha Geruah. It's somehow a weaker, lower quality malacha, and that's why it needs its own dedicated pasuk. Number one, you got to wonder in what ways Hotzah carrying things is a. There could be light, it could be heavy. Why is necessarily a lower level malacha? Yeah.
Maybe you're carrying something to do one of the other malachas.
Okay, good. Right, that's definitely true. That carrying is probably you're doing it for setup, and therefore.
Therefore, you might think that it's not inclusive in the first part.
You might think I think you make an important point. There's something about the nature of Hotzah that somehow
like
periphery, right? It's somehow periphery, something somehow ancillary. Then maybe it's the fact that it's a step in a process. And now the challenge to that, what's challenging about that approach is that most malachas are steps in the process. For instance, as they were planting, they were harvesting. So clearly, they're planning harvesting in order to sort of get down the road to processing it further. But I think you definitely point something very important, which is there's something qualitatively different about Hotzah. Right? And we need to think some more about
like
that.
It's less of a significant action. Like if you're walking, that could be part of the process.
Okay. So you're raising another great question, which is something fundamentally concerning about the first Gemara, and that may lie a solution to the second Gemara, is there are a lot of things that are not on the list. There were more than 39 sorts of activities that they engaged in making the Mishkan. Right? They walked, they talked. Clearly, if they wouldn't have breathed, they wouldn't have been able to succeed in building a Mishkan. Then I may say, okay, it seems a little trivial. Not breathe on Shabbos, that's Pekuach Nefesh. But it's hard to imagine the reason why we breathe on Shabbos is because of Hetzer Pekuach Nefesh. Right? So, you don't count your breaths on Shabbos. Breathing isn't the Malacha. Well, breathing was pretty critical. Now, again, you might say, remind me what your name is?
Aryeh.
Thank you. So I would say, well, this is the breathing is it was important to breathe, but it was it wasn't an approximate cause, right? It's very indirectly related to construction of Mishkan. So let's go a different route. How about talking? But conversation, let's appreciate with a sophisticated eye. If you've ever engaged in a successful group project, you know that communication is critical to running a success, right? To getting things done. Right? This was a massive project. Building a Mishkan. There was obviously a tremendous amount of communication that Bitzal and his crew were engaging in order to succeed at this project. So communication is critical. So how come you don't talk on jobs? Why isn't a group communication, why isn't conversation malacha? It was very central to getting the Mishkan done. They absolutely could not have created a Mishkan without a tremendous amount of conversation. So why isn't that a malacha? Why isn't that a malacha? That really gets to the heart of, well, what is Malacha? Right? So you say, well, the Gemara Mem Tes is half the story. So we know where to look, but we don't know where we're looking for. We know we're going to look at, well, that which was done in the Mishkan, but it's more precise than that. It's Malachas that were done in the Mishkan. Those Malachas which were done in the Mishkan are those Malachas which are forbidden. But what is a Malacha? Because after all, we're looking at the harvesting, we're looking at the tanning, or we're looking at the writing, or we're looking at the building, but we're not looking at the conversation. And perhaps we weren't really ready to look at carrying either. We're not for the fact that we found a specific pasuk that spoke to carrying. So what is malacha? So here I would suggest that the solution to this halachic problem is actually a hashkafic source. Take a look. If you turn the page, thank you so much for sharing. Oh, boy. Wow, okay. Oh, no, it's right here. Source number three. Mishnah Perkei Avos. The fifth parak of Avos is built around numbers, a whole series of tens, and then sevens, and then fours, and then threes, and then sort of ends with the whole slew of ages. At the very beginning, the parak opens, the first set of ten is Basar Ma'amaris Nivra Ha'olam. Kadosh Baruch Hu chose to create the world with a series of ten pronouncements. And then the Mishnah doesn't just make that numerical statement, the Mishnah wants to know why. Ma Talmud Lomar, why did Kadosh Baruch Hu choose, essentially, we could say, why did Kadosh Baruch Hu choose to create the universe in the form of a process? Could have just been a snap of the divine fingers and call an entire universe into a being fully formed. Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu seek, the Chumash Breishis is very clear, that Kadosh Baruch Hu chose a process, an unfolding process, evolutionary process, if you will. Kadosh Baruch Hu, step by step by step, builds a world, right, until you have what we have here. So that's essentially what the Mishnah is asking. Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu have this step and that step and this day build this and that? Just Mamar Echad. Say, I want a universe, and we're done. Yeah.
It seems to imply that God's bound by time.
How do you mean?
Because if it's a process, that means it's going from one point to another.
That is a very good point. I believe Ramban is the one who suggests near the beginning of the Perish Al Torah that space and time were among the first creatures. And that Kadosh Baruch Hu created. It's hard for us to intuit because all of our experiences have been within the framework, within the box of time and space. Rabban says that Kadosh Baruch Hu creates the dimensions of time and space. Kadosh Baruch Hu creates dimensionality. And within that box, so to speak, he proceeds to create the entire material universe. But mathematics and physics and logic and morality, concepts, the concept of a concept, the notion of an idea, all of those are creatures of Kadosh Baruch Hu. And there's sort of like this conceptual framework. And there was a physical framework in terms of time and space, and then rules of laws of physics and chemistry and mathematics. And then, with that, having created that framework, Kadosh Baruch Hu proceeds. Again, we think about it from in our terminology as temporally. Kadosh Baruch Hu then proceeds to create a universe. Right? But once a Kadosh Baruch Hu has created, so to speak, the box that we call time and space, the rest of creation happens within that framework, which is why Chumash describes it as Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
We just show humans that not everything like should be done instantly. Like you have to work those process steps to do things, and you can't just expect to have it all instantly.
Marvelous. Marvelous. As a matter of fact, the Rav has I wish we had even more time to talk about this. The Rav Salvechik has in a somewhat famous drasha, he speaks to a related medrash. Medrash quotes Rabbi Abahu, who talks about Kadosh Baruch Hu engaging in an ongoing cycle of almost like an oscillating sinusoidal cycle of creating and destroying. Kadosh Baruch Hu was borrowing levels to Machriv and creating worlds, destroying them until he finally gets, you know, the present universe, the present iteration. So Rabbi said, what does that mean? Kadosh Baruch Hu was Kal Yachal. Kadosh Baruch Hu was omnipotent. He could have created the universe exactly the way he wanted it first time around. He didn't need trial and error. So the Rabbi suggested, as you said, that's meant that whatever that divine reality is, it's being described in human terms as an iterative process of trial and error to teach us that when we, it's not so much the bona lamasu machrivon as opposed to the bona lamasu machrivon, the chozer of bona. The ability to the perseverance to say, I failed, I'm going to pick myself up, dust myself off, and try again, and again and again until I get it right. So if you think about the Holocaust survivors who rebuilt, think about Rabbi Akiva, who rebuilt after Bar Kokhba, the Bar Kokhba, the massacre at the end of Bar Kokhba revolt, and which may correspond to the loss of his 24,000 Talmidim. He managed to pick himself up, dust himself off, and start getting another 5 Talmidim, who end up becoming the backbone of all of Tarash Rapez. We have it. Right? That's the Bola Lama Sum Achrivim. Right? So it definitely is a lot, and that may be as well what the Gemara Misha goes on to say. Why the process? Li Parmen Arashav Shabbatim to Olam Shinivra Asar Maros. It's And liten saratov tzadikim shemekai minas olam shenivra basaros. It seems like it enhances, it magnifies the schar for those who handle the world as it's meant to be handled, use the world as it's meant to be used, and it sounds like it magnifies the pesha of those who abuse the world that was. It's either fundamentally, Kadosh Baruch Hu invested, so to speak, more in the universe and makes it more significant, or as you're saying, it was a way of communicating to people. Kadosh Baruch Hu is very invested in this universe. This universe matters. We matter. The choices we make in building or destroying this world physically and metaphysically matter to Kadosh Baruch Hu tremendously. Recognize the significance, the gravitas of what you're able to do. But let me ask you another question about this Mishnah. Because the first thing the Mishnah tells us is to focus on the language of Chumash as ma'amaros. The Tanaim are looking at Chumash and saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu are noticing that, pointing out to us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes his creative process in Chumash using the metaphor of speech. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Vayomer Elokim, Yihyar. Vayomer Elokim, Tacher Zeh. Vayomer, Vayomer, Vayomer. And the Chazal are, in the Mishnah, are seizing upon that. What's the significance of that? That Kadosh Baruch Hu's creative process is described as speaking? God has no mouth. He has no vocal cords. There was no air at the beginning. There was no sound. Well, why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's... Now, every metaphor, every description we have of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always anthropomorphic. We're always using human terminology and human realities that we're familiar with to imperfectly attempt, our best attempt, to describe a divine reality. Yeah.
If you go according to like the answer I said before, the speaking could be setting a goal in your mind and going after that goal.
Okay, good. Goal setting, yeah? What do you want to say, Avi?
Maybe speaking is considered a form of creation. Speech,
communication. Good. So the creation is described as speech, and something about speech, and I would suggest along the lines of what you're saying, is we don't have time to discuss this at greater length, but we understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't need to physically exert himself in creating the universe. He willed the universe things as he wanted, and it is. Things are as he wants it, with no effort whatsoever. Now, when human beings express their will and realize it and make it happen, there are different ways we could do that in a hands-on way, or we could do it sometimes less hands-on way. Of all the ways we could realize our vision, we could realize our will, the lowest impact, the lowest exertion is speech, speaking. It doesn't always work. But sometimes I could just say, here's what I want, and I'd, please open the door, someone opens the door. And that was the lowest effort, from my end, method of opening the door. So when we describe a Kadosh Baruch Hu's creative process as Amira, it may well be that the point is it was an expression of will, with no effort on a Kadosh Baruch Hu's part whatsoever. So that gets us thinking. If the Chumash tells us that keeping Shabbos is in part Zeichel Maaseh Breishis, we're trying to recreate in some way, no pun intended, replicate, I should say, a Kadosh Baruch Hu's cessation, a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Shvisa, he steps back from Bria, so we step back also on Shabbos. What does that mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't tired, he wasn't fatigued, he wasn't exhausted. There was no effort involved. So what? It's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had been putting a lot of effort, working hard, and exerting himself, and then he relaxed on Shabbos. That's nonsensical. What we can say is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was incredibly creative on Shabbos, over the course of Sheshes and Mei Breishis, and he ceased his creativity over the course of Shabbos. So when we, in our own human way, try to replicate what Kadosh Baruch Hu did, it's not so much about stopping the hard work, stopping the effort, as much as pulling back from creativity. Because we can't be as creative as Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu created ex nihilo. Kadosh Baruch Hu created something out of nothing. We're not doing that. We're always creating yesh me'yesh. But still, we can sort of step back from being changing things and making things. Rabbi Dr. Akiva Tatz, in his Anatomy of a Search, writes that it was his first Shabbos meal, his first encounter with Shabbos. He's at this Friday night Suda, and there's something different. He can't really put his finger on it. And then after a while, it sort of dawns on him that everyone's just enjoying being. No one is doing. We're just enjoying as is. That is what the Or Zarua seems to say, is this notion of Malacha Gerua. What's different about Hotzah, the reason why Hotzah almost didn't make it to listen to Lam Tetz Malachos, is because you might sweat a lot if the thing you're carrying is heavy, but you're not actually doing much to the item. Right? If you take a piece of paper and write on it, you've changed that piece of paper. If you have a jumble of things and you sort them, Bo'rer, you've added some quality to the items you're working with. Every Malacha, there's some chiddush, there's something added, some quality added or enhanced about the item that you're working on. You had soil which wasn't really so plantable, and now it's very fertile. Whatever the malacha is, carrying, I had an item, it was in zone number 1, and I moved to zone number 2. I didn't really do anything, I shifted position. comes, so I left my own devices. If all I had was Sadi, was Memtes, Mishkano said, it's like conversation, it's like breathing, it's like walking. There were activities that Jews need to do in building the Mishkan. They're not malachos, because you're not creatively changing or enhancing the object that you're working with. And so it's not a malacha. Hotzah is sort of on the edge, right? Planting and writing and so on and so forth, absolutely malachas. On the other extreme, the walking and talking and breathing, there's not malachas. There's no creative impact on some other item. Karen is, I would have imagined, is in category two. Comes the pasuk to say luchora that the same item in a different place is a somewhat different item. Context matters. If I moved it from rishus to rishus, I have in some way I recontextualized it. I have improved it. I have changed it. It's not the same that it was. So I can see that in some way I wouldn't have known this without this specific pasuk. But once I have that specific pasuk that appears to type of and base, All of a sudden, I can say, you know what? There is some degree of chiddush that's being applied to this item, and so I can see this as a molacha as well. I need the specific pasuk on Daf Tzadivav to enable me to recognize the Hotzah does fit within the general rubric of Daf and Tess of the Mishkan Shabbos connection. We are rapidly running out of time. I hope you appreciated the perspective on Shabbos. Number one, I enjoyed very much a chance to learn together for a little bit. I hope you had a chance to see the way, as I said before, the way in which the details of halacha and the machshava behind the mitzvah can intertwine. You may want to take a look going forward. Take a look at Rishon and Sarivav. You want to take a peek at that Ramban that appears at the end of the sheet. Feel free to hold on to the sheet. Oh, here I see are the other set of Maram Kamos, had we known. And take a look at the Ramban in Emor has a fascinating approach to sort of even moving even beyond in terms of intertwining the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, in terms of Shabbos in particular. Thank you so much, and have a fantastic day. Glad to stick around for questions. I think they want you outside.
Why is squeezing lemon considered?
That's right. We forgot. That's the most critical point of all. Give me 30 seconds.
Sure.
Thank you for reminding. Right. So let's get back to where we started. Squeeze the lemon. What has it to do with anything else? Squeeze the lemon, threshing. With this you sowed, everything falls into place. In terms of the exertion and the work and even the process, they're very different. The tools are very different. The degree of exertion is very different. But what this Yisod allows you to realize is the connection between Toldos and Avos is also driven not so much by process as much as by what's the creative impact. But that's really what Malach is all about. So threshing, the essence of what you accomplish with threshing is that you remove something from its natural encasement. No, if you're threshing grain, it's going to require a lot of effort. It's going to require a bat or an animal. If you're removing juice from the fruit in which it grew, it's going to require a lot less effort. But the malacha, once you understand what malacha is, the malacha is fundamentally the same. Thank you so much. I both say enjoy the rest of your day. Shkoyach.
Thank you. Yeah.